Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Liberty Radio Network, and No Agenda Global Radio.
Recording. Welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. We have a very special treat today. It's the Muslim versus anti-Muslim, I guess. I don't know what you'd call it. It's Jack Berkman we have on here and Will Coley. Jack Berkman is an attorney and lobbyist who did a video. I believe it was called or contained the line, "All Muslims are savages." Is that correct, Jack?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way. We're referring to their practice, but we can talk more about it. I'm not really anti-Muslim. I'm not anti anything. We evaluate everything on the facts.
Okay, hang on a second. I'm just introducing both sides before we get to your corners, gentlemen. All right. So, and Will Coley is a native of Tennessee. Spent the last 4 years as an ardent conservative political activist within the Muslim community, campaigned for Florida attorney and author of The Conservative Comeback, Todd Long, in his attempt to win the primary for a chance to unseat Alan Grayson in Florida's 8th District. And Will Coley is the head. Is it the head of Muslims for Liberty or a member of Muslims for Liberty?
I'm currently the national director.
Okay. So, yeah. Let's so I guess each take a minute or two and state first of all, you both agree that this is being recorded and it's going to be released unedited as is, and you guys are both fine with that, right, Will and Jack?
Sure thing.
Yeah, sounds great to me.
Okay, so Jack, go ahead and take off before I interrupted there, where what your video was about, and then we'll have Will do an initial response and then go back and forth.
It's a radio show. The video was, I think you're saying video. I host a weekly radio show on the Radio America Network. It appears in about 60 markets, 70 markets, something like that nationwide. And one of the topics was about the use of the word savage with respect to Muslims in the New York subway system about 2 months ago. And I started thinking about it and reflecting on it. And it certainly doesn't apply to a billion people, but I think what really threw me is this practice that many Muslims have, not all of them, but many of them have, where women and even young girls are required. Did I lose you guys? Did you lose me? Okay, you still have me. Where women and even young girls are required to cover their face, their head, their neck in public. And it occurred to me, if the word savage or barbaric does not apply to such a practice, then what does the word savage or barbaric apply to? Are they just kind of moot words and dead words that don't apply to anyone? Have we reached the point with political correctness where no one can be described as a savage and no one can be described as a barbarian? And so I thought about it further. You know, we have all of the liberals in the United States, they fight for every facet, and in many cases, nobly so, of women's rights, minority rights, all kinds of rights, transvestite rights, transsexual rights. America is a country obsessed with rights in all directions. And yet, when it comes to 500 million women or thereabouts that are required to cover their head and face, the left in this country and the left in Europe and most of Europe, the right in Europe, thinks it's just fine. And they say, oh, well, that's their faith. That's their quote unquote faith. We must accept this. Well, I don't think we need to accept this. And I call upon feminists in this country and indeed all over the world to shame these people into abandoning this practice. Is this practice a savage practice? You bet it is. Is it a barbaric practice? You bet it is. In Saudi Arabia, and throughout the Arabian Peninsula and other places in the Muslim world, girls as young as eight are required to cover their head, neck, and face because they might be thought of as sexual objects. And why should a young girl, because some twisted, sick human being in a place like Saudi Arabia might think an 8-year-old is a sexual object? be required to cover her face? And we here in the West are going to say, oh, that's okay. We can't criticize that. That's their faith. It's absurd. I think you see the paradox. I think anyone would see the paradox.
All right, Will?
I'm glad that you mentioned Saudi Arabia, because if you take a look at the Muslim world, the only place where there are laws in place that actually require the wearing of any kind of facial or headscarf is in Saudi Arabia. It's the only country where that's practiced. You can look up pictures of bazaars in Iran and Afghanistan and Pakistan, Malaysia, Kuwait, Qatar, all over the Middle East. You can look up pictures of bazaars, you know, these big, like we would call them a flea market here in the United States, basically. And you can see men and women walking around, and some women are wearing facial coverings, some women are wearing just head coverings, and some women aren't wearing any coverings at all.
A weak argument. I can rebut now or wait till you're done. It's a very weak argument. I got a quick rebut.
Well, I think he's not done. I think that's that's mid-sentence, let alone mid-paragraph. You had a good opening, you know, 3 minutes. Give him two or three minutes here.
No way.
In regards to the discussion of girls as young as eight, the traditions state specifically that there are certain people in certain circumstances that their actions are not held into account, and that is the sleeper until he wakes, the mad until they are well, and the child until they reach the age of puberty. So it would not be considered appropriate, according to the basics of the Sharia, to require a girl so young who was not of age to be in puberty to actually cover, because there would be no, she wouldn't be held accountable, and neither would the parents for that. Now, the girl would be held personally accountable as far as a sinful action, but based on the statements in Quran about the inability to compel anyone in religious matters, you cannot force someone to wear a head covering or a facial covering. Saudi Arabia has decided to legislate this, and they enforce it through police, but they don't have any actual religious authority to do so. They don't even have any religious authority for the rule that they exact over the Arabian Peninsula. The authority that they receive to have their rule comes from us and from the UK and from the United Nations. According to most of the Muslim world, and most Muslims that I know at least, Saudi Arabia and their entire government is completely illegitimate from a religious standpoint. So what Saudi Arabia does or does not do is the worst possible example of where to look to for the proper understanding or enforcement of what is actually called for in the Sharia. So to bring Saudi into a discussion always gives the opportunity to point out that, and this isn't the only case. I'd love to sit and talk with you and spend about 10 minutes telling you all of the places where Saudi Arabia violates the Sharia, even with their very existence and the name of their country. Now, the facial covering itself is a cultural phenomenon. It has nothing to do with Islam. The hijab is what is considered something that our women are religiously, not legally required to wear. And it's just a head covering that covers the hair and the neck area. And, you know, the cleavage and, you know, all of these areas need to be covered. But the facial covering, actually, there are some hadith traditions that you can find where there was a woman who wore a covering like this, and she went, I could be wrong about the name of which battle it is, but I believe it was the Battle of Hudaybiyah, which was the battle that the Muslims lost when the Meccans tried to invade Medina. And she came to look to see if her son had been killed in the battle, wearing a niqab, the facial covering. And the companions of Muhammad actually mocked her for coming to look for her son with such a covering on her face, because how could they tell who her son was if they couldn't even tell who she was? So there are many, many arguments. Al-Azhar has banned the niqab. You can't wear the facial covering and go to the most renowned and largest Islamic university in the world. So to assert that the niqab, the facial covering, is somehow a requirement, shows a great ignorance of what is actually what is actually spoken about and advocated in the Sharia.
All right, Jack.
Well, I think it's a distinction without a difference. I mean, your argument focuses on, it's a weak argument because it focuses on whether it's legally compelled, religiously compelled, compelled by custom, or just compelled by society, or somehow otherwise compelled. Obviously, it's compelled all over the, I don't think women take any delight in covering themselves up. Indeed, when they come to the West, most of them can't wait to uncover. My point
I would
is,
have to argue against that. My wife is not, is my wife's from Nairobi, and if I actually told my wife to remove her headscarf or to dress in an inappropriate manner, my wife would leave me.
Okay, let me finish you. Isn't it the case though that any society, whether by custom, by religion, by law, by anything that requires anyone to cover their face, woman, man, anyone, is that not a savage and terrible practice? Who in the world is any government, any religion, any organization, any society in this, the year 2012, where freedom and democracy flourish? You'll tell your citizens, tell a woman she's required to cover her face? This is worse than the Middle Ages. My point is, we should not tolerate that practice. And people who engage in that practice, again, whether it's leaked by law, religion, custom, or otherwise, should not be welcome at the table of the Brotherhood of Man, because they're animals, animals. And there's no basis or justification. And I call upon feminists throughout the West to say, enough, we will not tolerate this. And women of the Arab world, to paraphrase Marx, off with your veils, throw them in the garbage. And let's move the Islamic world into the 21st century.
Well, I would have to argue that you've trying to think of how to put this. You take the wrong approach.
Why?
In my personal opinion, I would have to quote a Yemeni scholar by the name of Habib Ali. He's quite renowned in the modern era, and he said, the way he puts it is that the problem that we have is that we need more female scholars. We need more women Islamic scholars who have an understanding of the Sharia, who have an understanding of the rights that are guaranteed them by God himself, and have the ability to stand up and with the credentials,
well, that's
stand
another issue.
In the face and tell and demand. Demand rights that they are granted. Demand rights that they have as human beings and as women, and be able to do so on a footing that can't be challenged. And this is what Habib Ali's objective, and one of his.
He might be right, but that's another issue. You're off on a tangent. Let's focus this. What I'm saying
is this is very relevant. Your view is that women of the West should encourage or impose their cultural values on people who may not be interested in them. My view is that a religious community, which is who we're talking about here, we're not talking about the culture. You said Muslims. You didn't say Saudi Arabians. You didn't say Arabs. You didn't say the Saudi government. You said Muslims.
Muslim.
And when you want to deal with a religious community, you need a religious solution that comes from a religious tradition. And that's what we need.
We need more Aisha
in the world.
I think you're missing the point. I'm arguing that these tenets of their religion are downright sick, and they're wrong. I mean, Adolf Hitler had a religion, and he had a lot of tenets of it, and
arguing that something that is not a tenet of a religion is a tenet of a religion. You just did it again. You say we can't categorize or put this in neat little boxes of culture or religion or law, and then you categorize. You say, no, this is about religion, but this isn't about a religious tenet.
You're missing the point.
I think I've fairly simply proven by the fact that it is banned from the largest, most renowned Islamic university on the planet. You are not allowed in the campus with a facial covering. If you are a woman, you are not allowed to wear a niqab on campus.
The point is, there are the
Islamic universe,
millions.
This is not a Muslim
missing the point. Well, you're missing the point. The point is this. There are hundreds of millions of Islamic women all over the world. Every day who cover their face and neck because they believe they are forced to. I don't care whether that's compelled by religious law.
You are completely incorrect. What you're saying is that the population of Saudi Arabia, the female population of Saudi Arabia, is well over 100 million.
I don't know what the population of Saudi Arabia is. I know there are about a billion Muslims.
That's the only place where women are compelled to wear a niqab. Women are compelled to wear this facial covering. As far as outside of Saudi Arabia, I have in my family, I have my wife, I have her sister. Her sister wears hijab, didn't used to wear hijab, but has just started wearing hijab again recently. My wife has worn hijab as long as I've known her. My wife's sister-in-law, her brother's wife, wears niqab.
Let me ask this real quick. Let me interject. Does that cover the whole face or just the hair? I mean, you can see her face in the pictures I've seen, right?
Hijab and niqab are two different things. The niqab is a separate piece that goes over the face. The hijab is just what covers the hair.
Why are you telling me? You understand the very wearing of any of these things is a savage and terrible and humiliating practice. What difference does it make?
That she chose.
I mean, let me see. First, you guys are talking at the same time. You guys are both, hang on. You got to both stop talking for a minute. You're both talking at the same time, and literally, I can't hear anything. The recording is like, so one thing I want to get straight is, and I want to ask Jack this, and then have Will respond. If we're talking, let's define terms, okay? The head covering that Will is talking about, to me, looks like what a nun wears. It just covers the head, the top of the hair and the side. Like Jewish women wear something on their head. A lot of religions wear something on their head. We're not talking about the Lawrence of Arabia covering the whole face except the eyes, right?
The hijab is what covers the head. The niqab is the facial covering. It's a separate piece that goes over the face.
Okay, now let's have Jack talk. All right, go ahead, Jack.
My point is this. I don't care. Those are distinctions without differences. It doesn't matter to me. My point is this. I don't care what it covers. My point is this. These societies, whether by law, custom, religion, whatever you want to call it, there is a social compulsion forcing people to cover themselves. The act of forcing a woman to cover herself is a horrifying act. It is an act of the 6th century that has no place in the modern world. The fact that it goes on, I describe as savage and barbaric. I'm not interested in, you guys are off on all these petty distinctions, whether it's by law, custom, religion, whether it covers the head, the neck, or the head and the neck or the face. None of that is relevant to this discussion. What I'm saying is when you have a society that compels a woman to humiliate and disgrace and cover herself in that way, when you don't do the same thing with a man, what in the world are we doing and why are we so ready to accept this? These people shouldn't have acceptance.
See, first of all, that's not true. There are dress codes for men.
All right.
Basically what you're saying is that any religious tradition that encourages covering of any kind, be it hair or facial, is savage.
No, that's not what I said. That's what you said. What I said is the Muslims have a very extreme, that's like saying any religion that talks about wearing a hat is savage. No, what I'm saying is the Muslims have a very, very, very extreme practice that extends to a lot of women, millions of women, several hundred million, covering a good portion of their from their neck up. And you can't compare that to something evangelicals do in the South or something Jews do, because that's 1% of it, and you know it. You're chasing red herrings and you're making distinctions without differences. You know that this is an extreme practice.
Well, no, I would argue that the Orthodox, and Orthodox means those who who follow a religious tradition the most closest. So the Orthodox Jewish community, the females cover themselves from head to ankles. They leave the face uncovered, but they cover everything else, all the way down to the wrist. Same thing with the very Orthodox in the Catholic community, the nunnery. They cover hair, neck, all the way down to the ankles. And this is considered fine. Now, Reformed Jews, in the Jewish community, not the Orthodox community. You want to say a religious tradition. You want to say, well, these people who follow a modern day interpretation that no longer holds to its actual religious requirements, these people don't do it. But the Orthodox from amongst them who do still hold to the religious requirements do it. So those people who do it are savages. And the people who don't do it are modern and cosmopolitan and have evolved to our level of democracy. So you're okay with that.
Okay, well, let's let Jack talk here because he's trying to chime in and it's coming in like broken code or something. So go ahead, Jack.
You tend to ignore, maybe we've talked enough about the coverings, you tend to ignore the broader reality. In the Jewish world, the woman occupies a central place. I mean, she is, if anything, the stronger. I mean, I've heard Jewish men always put their wives on a pedestal, saying she's the stronger partner. In the Muslim world, women face nothing but terrible subjugation. I mean, they face subjugation in the Muslim world from end to end. You know that in the Quran, the Quran says that I'll never forget seeing this, that when a woman is menstruating, she is not permitted to enter a house of worship. I mean, do you have any idea how horrifying that is?
What in the Jewish community?
What in the world? I've never heard of a practice like that.
Then you never studied Judaism.
Women
in Judaism, a woman's not allowed in the house with her in her own home when she's menstruating.
Oh, that's wrong. But you can't compare Judaism to Islam.
Because you're saying Muslims have savage practices because of the fact that women aren't allowed in a religious temple during their menstrual cycle, when the Jewish community requires, according to their traditions, the woman's not even allowed in her own home at this point in time.
Let me ask you this. Leaving aside the Jews, why are you so eager to defend the Muslims? Why do you come back? Do you disagree with my basic premise that women live in horrible subjugation throughout the Islamic world? I mean, do you really disagree with that?
Absolutely not. I absolutely concur with that. I believe that I was trying to give you the argument for a solution for that, but you decided that it wasn't something that you were interested in. That we need to raise up a generation of fuqaha, of women who are trained and understand Islamic jurisprudence and are able to demand the rights from men that they deserve. Aisha bint Abu Bakr as-Siddiq radiallahu ta'ala anhu was a political leader. She led the military at the Battle of the Camel, was wounded in the Battle of the Camel. She was a mu'adith. She was a reciter and transmitter of hadith traditions. She was a mujtahid. She was one of the top mujtahid of her time. She was so revered that she threw her shoes. This is where that whole thing about the throwing shoes and George Bush, it's actually where it was born. She threw her shoes at the Khalid, at the leader, the head leader of the Muslim world. She threw her shoes at him and condemned him in the mosque in front of hundreds of people and got away with it. Yeah, because she was correct. And because the credibility.
Let me just jump in here.
Religious standpoint to all make
right, in here, Will.
And Will. That's what we need today. We need more women like that who have the ability to make that stand.
I heard you.
Okay, Jack. Let's
I heard you, Will. Now listen. Here's
let's let
thing.
Jack go, Will. Go ahead, Jack.
You. Here's my point, though. Why should women have to demand rights? Why don't we call a spade and condemn societies where women have to demand these rights? Why do you not join me in issuing?
Women had to demand their rights in the United States, but just like 50 years ago.
Not the worst of America. What I'm saying is, why do you not join me in condemning these societies with these, quote, savage practices so that they will change. Why do you not join me?
I understand that it's the governments of these countries and not the societies. Why don't you join me in condemning? Hold on. Why don't you join me in condemning the fact that our country props up the dictators in these countries like Qatar, like Saudi Arabia, like Kuwait, like Bahrain, that we prop up dictators, we allow them to stay in power when their people do not want them in power. We funnel them when we know they fund terrorism. Join me in standing up and saying that our government needs to allow the people in these countries to overthrow and place their own governments instead of these dictatorships.
First of all, that's another issue. Getting into that's the politics.
Well, I think that's Will's main issue. Let me jump in here. Is that Will thinks the state is the problem in all these countries, not the religion. So I think that is okay to focus on. I'm going to moderate and say that's not a separate issue.
It's fine, but let me just say this here, Michael. My point is a very narrow one. I mean, we can get into a huge discussion of the Quran, a huge discussion of America's role and Britain's role in the Mideast and everything else. We can get into the creation of the State of Israel and talk for 18 hours. What I'm saying is my point here is a very narrow one. It is to say that these practices that we're outlining here are savage and barbaric practices, and they are appropriately called that. Whether they're compelled by law, custom, religion, whatever, they are nonetheless compelled. We know that. And women are subjugated. And this is wrong, and it is savage. And that's the only point I'm making. And I think we should all join in agreeing to that.
Will?
Okay. Well, what my point is that among scholars, there's a valid disagreement with evidences. I don't accept these evidences. I've seen them. I don't see that they're strong enough to support the case of those who feel that the niqab is somehow a fard or a wajib, you know, a required part of the religious tradition. You know, there's a valid disagreement among scholars. I don't believe that the evidences in favor of saying that the facial covering is a requirement are strong enough. I believe that the arguments that are given by the scholars that say that it's not are far more compelling. I believe that for some strange reason, I'm sure it has a lot to do with the media and the way that perceptions are shaped, the culture and the practices of certain quote-unquote Muslim governments are misconstrued as somehow a part of Muslim theology or Muslim beliefs, and that a better understanding would, from our view, you know, from the Western side, a better understanding of this fact would be quite helpful. I believe that the state itself in all of these countries are illegitimate, that they've been put into power by illegitimate ways and illegitimate means, that they have no religious legitimacy. They've not tried to reinstate a caliphate or anything else in the land of Hijaz, as they should do if they were Muslim governments. I believe that they literally have no right to consider themselves to be in power, and that they legislate these things on the people without the people's consent, and that our government assists them in this by giving legitimacy to these governments and by funding them and funneling money to them via U.S. taxpayer-funded subsidies. And that it is the biggest villain in all of this is government, both quote-unquote modern Muslim governments and the Western governments who prop them up. And if that we were able to allow the people of these societies the ability to rule over these societies rather than be ruled over, that most of these things would go away on their own and go back to being practiced in a minority of the community rather than being practiced in a larger number.
Cool. Okay, Jack, go ahead.
I don't want to stray too deeply into politics because, again, it's a really different subject. But just on the political point, you see what happened in Egypt when we threw out Mubarak and we have a democracy. Now you have the Mideast inflamed and we have more madness. So I don't agree with you there. But again, that's not really the subject. When you say we need a broader understanding of some of these practices, what you really mean is we need to learn to tolerate these things.
No, and, I didn't say that. I didn't say anything about tolerating anything. I said that you need to make the understanding, to have the understanding to make the distinction between what are cultural practices and what are required religious practices. And there is no understanding of that distinction. You seem to think that because something goes on in a self-professed Muslim country, that it is somehow a requirement of the religion when it's not.
You seem to be making the argument, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem to want to believe that these several hundred million Muslim women who wear these things do so because they really want to and not because they're forced and subjugated. Now, I think that's like, if you really believe that, I think that's IQ 40. I mean, that's insane.
I would say that because I've seen it with my own eyes.
Oh, that's insane. I mean,
My wife's younger brother has a wife, and they live in California now. He works for a software company out there, and she decided when she didn't wear niqab when they got married, she didn't wear niqab when they first moved to the U.S., but she decided after they'd been here for about a year that she wanted to start wearing niqab. And against his much protesting, because of his fear of her being targeted by people because of the way that she looked, she went ahead and wore the niqab because she felt that it was something that would allow her to be closer to God, that it kept men from looking at her, and that she would never have to worry about being the object of lust for a man on the street. And that was what she decided to do. She made that conscious decision. I know for a fact because I was around when it happened. So he made the choice. It was something that he was against. He did not want her to wear the niqab because of his fear that she would be targeted, because Orlando, Florida was well known for the anti-Muslim community having a very, very loud and strong voice there.
Here's what I don't understand. You're debating me on the smaller point, but yet agreeing with the larger point. You seem to agree that Muslim women, by and large, live in horrible subjugation. But yet when I condemn the practice of covering the head, you fight like hell. And I don't understand, if you agree
because
with the
problem, sure, these guys, first of all, you equate subjugation with wearing hijab. Wearing hijab is a religious requirement. It is something that women, as a religious requirement, are required to do. It is something that Jewish women are required to do.
Their religion is all about subjugation. It's all about the subjugation of women. That's a huge part of Islam.
Actually, no, it's not. According to Quran, in chapter 2, it says, لَهُنَّ مِثْلُ أَلَذِي أَلَهِنَّ. They have the same rights that they have against them.
But that's not carried out.
وَلَجَرَالِ أَلَهِنَّ دَرَجَى. And men have one degree over the women. That men and women have the same rights against them as they have. And that men have one degree above women. Allow me to finish, please. That men have one degree above women. And the Mufassir, the scholars of Tafsir, the oldest scholars of Tafsir, who were people who knew Muhammad directly, specifically stated that the single degree was that the man should give all of the rights to his wife, but he should not be upset if she is unable to observe all of her rights to him because of the nuts of her condition, because of the difficulty in being pregnant, in bearing children, in raising children, and in taking care of a home. So because of those difficulties upon her, the Mufassir, at least Ibn Abbas, who was a member of the Sahaba, he knew Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam directly, said, men should observe all of a woman's rights to her, and women should not be required to observe all of their rights to men. The Prophet gave us the example of what we should do when he washed his own clothes. He mended his own sandals. He helped cook with dinner. He was known for taking care of the house.
No,
he
relevance.
Did all these things to help his wives out. And these were the examples that he gave to men as how we were supposed to act with our wives. There is no hadith tradition where he ever struck any of his women. As a matter of fact, on three separate occasions, there are hadith traditions where he condemns men. How can you sleep with your wife when you beat them like slaves in the daytime, is what he used to say. So You claim that the religion is about subjugation when this is a religion who said, you know what? You're not allowed to beat your wife to death anymore. And you know what? Women are no longer property. You can't inherit them. Something that was practiced in Western cultures clean up into the 15 and 1600s where you could inherit your brother or father's wife. This was barred in the 700s in Arabia. Women were given property rights, the right to vote and have a political and a religious voice. All of these things happened 1,000 years before they happened in the Western world.
Am I in still or am I out?
Religion is all about the subjugation of women is complete and total propaganda.
I'm going to click out here. Do you want me to talk or what are we doing? Okay, find me a country. I mean, here's what I would say. Find me a Muslim country where there's any kind of even reasonable equality between men and women. Find me a Muslim country where women are...
Religion.
Where women are not beaten regularly, where women do not suffer beatings in the home regularly. And if women had those rights 1,000 years ago, maybe you're right. But if that's the case, the Muslim world has done nothing but regress on these matters in the last 1,000 years. It's certainly behind the West.
I absolutely agree. And you know what? The prophecies of the end times say exactly that that is exactly what's going to happen. That the Muslims were at the best that they were ever going to be when Muhammad was alive and the first three generations after him. And that slowly over time, as we get to the age of Qiyamah, when the Antichrist reveals himself and the whole end of time scenario happens, that when we get there, that the Muslims will be many, that there literally will be billions of us, but they'll be like the foam on the ocean, that they'll be ignorant, that they won't know their religion, that their mosques will be big, huge, grand, beautiful structures with gemstones and gold, but they'll be filled with ignorance and jahiliyyah. Jahiliyyah is ignorance. Practices from before Islam, the things that we got rid of, we will take them back.
Guys, this has been fun. Thank you. Listen, I got to go watch Pittsburgh and Baltimore here. This has been great fun.
Counselor, you don't want to do a longer closing arguments here?
I've made my point. I think that's it. But I enjoyed it. It was fun. And thank you. And get us some publicity.
We appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You have a good day, Jack.
All right. Wow.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Liberty Radio Network, and No Agenda Global Radio.
All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.